Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Play clock down to three. Gets the snap. Wants to throw. Waits. Delivers in the end zone. Caught. Touchdown. Penn State. Brandon Felder.
To the 30, to the 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown. That's going to be Alex Bruner off the left side, and he'll go the distance from 39 yards out.
Back goes Hackenberg, sets, good pocket, rolls far side, fires, downfield, caught, touchdown. Penn State, Brandon Felder on a back shoulder throw.
Here's a handoff, Pepper right side, into the end zone. He deserves the touchdown after finishing off the drive and setting it up with a 53-yard run moments ago.
Back goes Hackenberg on a straight drop. He sets, he fires in the end zone. James is there, touchdown, Penn State.
Taking it at the 25-yard line to the 30. Coming up the middle of the field is Schaefer. Schaefer's off to the races. They're not going to get him. 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Shikalemi.
Delivers it long and deep downfield for Robinson. Leaps high in the air. He's got it. Inside the five at the pylon. It's at the one-yard line with 27 seconds to go. Half yard away, 27 seconds. Hackenberg's under center. Quarterback sneak right side. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions are an extra point away from a tie.
It's end zone or nothing. Kemberling with the rollout to the near side to the five. Touchdown, Shikalemi. Kemberling races off the right side.
Dillio waits for the snap. Snaps right there. Kick by Gibbons is up, and the kick is blocked. It is blocked. The Penn State wins another overtime.
Snaps high, sets down. The kick is up. It is high enough, long enough, it is good. Burke hits it from 27 yards out, right down the middle.
Belt, left side. Belt to the near side. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions win it in overtime and knock Michigan from the ranks of the unbeaten. They storm off the bench into the near corner of the end zone. 107,884 love it. And on homecoming, the Nittany Lions deliver drama.
Drama might be the understatement of the day on Saturday as we have the Sunbury Motors Studio East today. Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Today's show sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury. Great way to start off the Monday montage, Bob Buhner.
You interspersed the Shikalemi Braves' big win Friday night with that ho-hum. Don't even raise the blood pressure.
Okay.
One point. Yeah. Action out at Beaver Stadium Saturday evening.
You know, what was the? You got to tell me, what was the atmosphere like out there? I mean, you were there in person. I mean, just listening to Steve on the radio there, and then hearing the cuts again here a few seconds ago, it's just unbelievable.
The atmosphere reminded me a lot of the 2005 Ohio State game, the first actual student-led whiteout.
Yeah, that's the one where my kid fell asleep.
Exactly, but the other 108,000 people were awake. But it was actually the sense of anticipation in the parking lots, out in the paddocks with the tailgating was quite high. I think there was a feeling that this was a make or break game for Penn State, coming off a very poor performance against Indiana. Everybody, including the team and the coaches, knew they did not play well. And this was a Michigan team that kind of, as Steve predicted on this on his show last week, a team that was ripe to be plucked.
Yeah, and I felt that as well from watching them play Akron alone. And looking at some of the statistics from the Connecticut game, I thought that that's a game that they kind of squeaked by themselves, But they... You look at what happened with Akron and seeing what Akron was able to do in that last drive. I mean, they're inches away from pulling off a major upset It seems like Michigan always seems to be upset by somebody that, shocks you every year. But I think what else it showed was the character of this football team. This was a character-building win for this football team.
This was not a game where Penn State got to an early lead and then struggled along and held on and then finally wins it. This was a game where Penn State got up, then they got down, they roared back for the tie, and then they dodged bullets by luck or preparation or a combination of both, culminating in the Bill Belton 2-yard run in the fourth overtime, the longest game in Beaver Stadium history.
Were you surprised by the 4th-and-1 call?
No.
Really?
No, I was not. I was surprised.
I was a little surprised, but then again, that was just me.
No, I was not surprised. One of the things I think that a coach knows about his team is that his defense was getting really tired.
Well, let me ask you this. Would the thought have been, and we're hype,
yeah.
This is hypothetical, obviously, but would the thought have been different if they didn't have the advantage of knowing what they needed to win the game? In other words, if they didn't get the fourth down and they didn't convert, what's the worst that happens? You go to the fifth overtime.
That's all true, but
still
I think
a gutsy call. I'm not taking anything away from it.
You know, these kids have been there in that stadium for almost 7 hours, and I mean this applies to both teams. But Penn State's defense was fairly tired.
You remember the ESPN feature that they did on Penn State?
Yes.
In the summer, there's one segment in there, and I can't remember exactly how he words it, but they do a little drill toward the end zone, a first and goal drill.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, as an offense, we should be able to get this score. As a defense, we should be able to stop them. And that's what it reminded me of, is that on that 4th-and-1 was that little comment. I'm paraphrasing, yeah, obviously, but it was that little comment to his team during that day in August where he explained that whole situation. I thought, there it is on the football field right there at 4th-and-1 in overtime.
And I think the other thing that people don't realize is that the big drive of the game was the 80 yards, no timeouts, go all the way, basically on three plays. I mean, one play was a spike, and one play was the sneak at the end. So it was really four plays where they used the clock. They practice that. They come up at the end of each practice session with a kind of a Hail Mary, if you will, scenario, and then they play it out and practice it. So putting a young 18-year-old freshman in that situation with a bunch of good players around him, but nevertheless, the world might be shocked, but the guys at Penn State in the practice field, they see this every practice.
Well, today's show sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury. You can find out what they can do for you online at purdyinsurance.com. And I know you're probably wondering about Steve Jones, and Steve will be joining us. He did have to have a vocal box surgery.
Yeah.
After the game. I think he did blow out a vocal cord somewhere along the line. I can relate.
Yes, you guys were both busy with that touchdown stuff that you do so well.
I had a few strained vocal cords after Friday night as well. But we will check in with Steve Jones momentarily. But first, let's hear inside Penn State Athletics.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a 2010 Ford Escape XLT, one of the most affordable fuel-efficient SUVs, just $59.95. A one-owner, newly inspected and fully serviced 2012 Ford Focus SEL, $13,998. 2010 Dodge Nitro SE comes with warranty. Lowest price promise, $17,989. 2011 Ford F-150 XLT, an outdoorsman and contractor's choice, just $29,494. And a 2012 Hyundai Sonata 2.4-liter new tires, just $14,993. Call 570-286-7746.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout.
See the full inventory and schedule a test drive at sunburymotors.com.
At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Even when they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car. Picked the make, model, and dealer all by himself. And negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word. Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Welcome back, Steve Jones Show, Monday edition after the big game on Saturday, and Steve Jones joining us via phone today. Steve, have you had your vocal cords taken care of?
Well, as Bob knows, he saw me after the game. There was no issue after the game as to how I was. But it turned out that this morning, a family issue that I must take care of in Connecticut, and have to go up there tonight and visit someone who was not well, and then in all likelihood I'll be back tomorrow. So that's the reason why. So I fully intended on being in the studio till about 10 o'clock this morning, and then had to make some adjustments in the schedule, so that's what we're doing here right now. We're making adjustments. It's what we do.
It's nice to be able to have you after the big game and kind of talk a little bit about it from your perspective as well. I mean, you're so into calling the game. Do you have a chance to watch it at all?
Oh, I mean, I'm always watching the game. I mean, you know how I am. I'm looking around. I say, you're trying to go through situations and things like that. There's four different spots where you felt like the game, where Penn State was on the verge of losing the game. Even after the drive, that tied the game up and Beaver Stadium's going crazy. I'm looking at the clock and there's 27 seconds left. And I made the statement on the broadcast, look, if Michigan gets the ball to the 35-yard line, Gibbon's career long is 52 yards. Well, he tried a 52-yarder and it was short. Then overtime started reminding me a lot of the Orange Bowl overtime in 2006, in January 2006, where he doinked one up the upright. This one hit Dowry in the helmet, and Boblett's got a piece of it. I mean, I think everybody got a piece of it.
I was going to say, everybody kind of touched that one.
Yeah. I mean, even Alan Robinson said, it hit my fingers. I'm like, well, you're standing in the back. And, you know, then they put it in the center of the field, and he slid it wide left. You're like, I felt like I was watching Morris the Cat Nine Lives here. It was unbelievable. But in the end, look, the kids made a lot of plays, and that was the big part of it. They went for it. They were aggressive. I think the aggressiveness is something everybody appreciated. I think one of the reasons Michigan didn't win was because I think they got a little passive at times. And at the same time, Penn State did a brilliant job defensively of taking away their straight-ahead running game. Michigan could not get their straight-ahead running game going. Fitz Tucson had 27 carries for 27 yards, and really quarterback draws and X plays by Devin Gardner, that was the running game for Michigan, because when they went straight ahead with their normal tailback stuff, which they tried 30 times in the game, they didn't get anything off of that, and I think that was important, because I think, for example, that tackle in overtime for Gibbons, and I think this is the one where he slid it, where it was blocked, the one that was blocked. They're 18 inches away from a first down because they gave it on a straight handoff and the tailback couldn't get there. I mean, that's just the way the game went. So there are a lot of little things in a game like that added up to big things.
I think this is one of those games, though, and Bob and I just talked about it, that was really won in August and in all the practices leading up to it. And you mentioned it with Bill O'Brien there and inside Penn State Athletics, the fact that they're always doing that ball at the 20. Here's you got to get points. Here's how many minutes on the clock. And, you know, it's that kind of drive is what Hackenberg and the offense had in those last few seconds of the game. And then they had the 4th-and-1 in the fourth overtime. Well, that goes back to, as I mentioned in the last segment with Bob, something I saw on ESPN on the little feature they did where Bill O'Brien's saying, you know, we should be, as an offense, we should be able to get this on first and goal or first and short and fourth and short. And as a defense, we should be able to stop it. And I think that shows the character that was built in this team over that time period.
Oh, no question about that. It is something every day, Monday through Thursday, they work at that. The players don't know what the situation's going to be. It could be 20-yard line, a minute 20 left, one timeout. Could be their own 35-yard, you know, and you need a field goal. You need a touchdown. Could be their own 35-yard line, 40 seconds. No timeouts, need a touchdown or a field goal. So he just outlines it, tells them what they need. They put it up on the clock. They referee it. You know, you need a spike, clock keeps running, whatever, and they do that. Now, it's not just the offense, though. The defense is on the other side because, you know, it's ones-on-ones when they do this and then twos-on-twos. And when it's ones-on-ones like that, you know, obviously the defense is going through its two-minute drill as well, or 50-second drill or minute 20 drill or whatever it happens to be. So I mean, this is something that every day they work on. It. Christian Hackenberg, you know, give him credit, showed a lot of poise in that situation. Allen Robinson made it. Huge catch on the sideline to start it out where he kept that foot in bounds. It was called incomplete. You know, that's why every play, it was reversed justifiably so, which did two things. The reversal stopped everything for the moment, gave them the first down, but it also showed that he was out of bounds in possession, which automatically stopped the clock. It was a first down, and it was the first big play, you know, a 14-yard play. And that got them going. And the pass, of course, to Felder. But then Conley got to the line of scrimmage, spiked the ball, then they set it up to the big pass play to Robinson. And I had said on the air with 27 seconds to go, you know, and first and goal, you can run it if you want. Because you can, you know, when you're that tight and everyone's in that close, you can run the football at that point, still get a spike out of it, and probably still have two more, maybe three more plays after that. So they actually had a lot of time there at the end to actually do that. Thus, the quarterback sneak made complete sense. The belt play in overtime, it got to the point where it was fourth down and it was a half yard. The heck with another field goal. Just go for it, you know, win it or lose it right here and go for it. And I think that kind of aggressiveness paid off. Zerbe made a heck of a block on that play. And I thought that belt showed great patience being, you know, nudged at first and then slipping through the hole and getting the first down. Just like he showed patience on the touchdown run where he bounced that thing to the outside and was able to score.
Well, Steve, we'll check in with you again a little bit later on. Talk more about this as well in a few minutes. We'll have Donnie Collins of the Scranton Times Tribune coming up on the Steve Jones Show. And we'll also get a chance to look back at a couple of interviews we had when Penn State was, well, getting back some scholarships, and rightly so. John Stroh was our guest. We'll look back on that coming up in the next few minutes as well. This is the Steve Jones Show, sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury. News next.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Steve Jones in commute today, but he'll be checking in again a little bit later on here on the Steve Jones Show. As we hang out in the Sunbury Motors Studio East, Kevin Hur along with Bob Buhner, Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Bob, your voice is back, right? No, it's not joining, back. Oh, there it is.
There
oh,
it
sorry.
Is. Yeah. I was joining the 108,000 strong vocal supporters Saturday night game. I want to tell you, I had an invitation to the coveted tailgate party with Steve Jones after the game. And Steve and Jack Ham, they do their post-game show. Then they somehow navigate their way down and out to this tailgate. The calmest guy in the parking lots and paddocks of Penn State after announcing for nearly 6 hours, really.
It's true.
Started at 3:30 in the afternoon.
3:30 with the tailgate show.
And it's now almost 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
And this guy walks down as if nothing had happened.
I wonder, was it a 5 water bottle game?
I would say it was.
Yeah, I would think so.
But he came down and grabbed a Coca-Cola product. Nothing else. And was being besieged by some friends with questions. And honestly, I don't think his heart rate, blood pressure moved one point
that
the entire
doesn't
time.
Surprise he me is, a bit.
He's the consummate professional. Just called one of the greatest games in Penn State sports history, and he's called a lot of great ones. And he was just the Steve Jones that you and I know and that I'm sure our listeners out there come to appreciate.
My question, and you can feel free to make posts on Facebook, and maybe we'll take some calls a little bit later on here in the program too. My question is this the best Penn State game ever? Now, I know it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for a lot of people to make that decision just because this one is the one in most recent memory. But, you know, Steve mentioned the Orange Bowl game.
January 2006, yeah. Florida State, Bobby Bowden versus Joe Paterno.
I mean, that has to be one of them.
It went to three overtimes. I think we ended up the third-ranked team in the country. There's that famous Nebraska game where Penn State went the length of the field with some questionable, were they inbounds or out-of-bounds catches that occurred in that drive.
Even though Penn State didn't win, was it the famous eight-second game at Michigan?
Yeah, the two-second game.
Was it 2 seconds?
There were two, yeah, and they got 2 seconds put back on the clock.
Was that Carr?
Yeah, Lloyd Carr. And when Steve didn't make anything out of this at all when he was announcing, but the referees did put 2 seconds back on the clock.
Well, that's payback from there.
Well, and I'm thinking, is Lloyd Carr in the house?
You know, a friend of mine is a big Michigan fan, and right after that happened, he sent me a fake ad for the Lloyd Carr clock, which adds 2 seconds to every hour.
Well, and so that was a great game. On the downside, there's, the national championship wins, 82-86. So there's a whole host of great games, but obviously this is it's no worse than in the top five.
Well, if you have a couple of seconds, go online to Facebook and go to the Steve Jones Show on Facebook and tell us what you think. Is this the best Penn State game ever, or where does it rank in your favorite Penn State games? And you can also send us an email, stevejones@wkok.com, and we'll check in with that as well. As was posted on our Facebook page earlier, the Steelers win, Chickalamee wins, the Eagles and Steelers win with a Penn State win. What's Kevin Herr have to complain about? I really don't have anything today.
This is the happiest I've seen you since, and I'll bring up that dreaded month of August tease you about so much. But
there's only one problem, though.
What's that?
I did not see more than about 5 plays of the Steeler game.
No.
Yeah, I had a wedding on Sunday.
Who gets married on the day the Steelers play? Come on.
And I got to see about 5 to 10 plays of the first half, and I'm like, oh, yeah, here we go.
Well, anyway, it was a great weekend for sports. Friday night, a lot of good wins by local teams. A lot of noted losses.
But Bob, here's my problem.
Yes.
The Steelers win one game, and it's the game I didn't watch this year.
It's a message from God.
That's what I'm saying. So do I have to not watch the games the rest of the year?
I think for at least next weekend you do to test the theory. And if they win again next week, you are not watching another Steelers game this season.
It's going to be tough. But you're right. A lot of great high school games, and we'll chat more about that a little bit later on as well. But let's go back a couple of weeks to the start of the NHL season. Steve had an opportunity to chat with NHL.com's Pete Jensen about how he saw the season shaping up, and we're still very early in the season. Penguins finally did lose a game, by the way.
They did.
So they're off the undefeated streak.
Came back to win, though, Saturday night.
But they look solid.
They definitely look solid. The only reason they lost is they put in their second goaltender, who was a virtual rookie. And he got pelted a bit, but they're doing well.
Well, let's check in with Pete Jensen, Steve's interview with NHL.com's Pete Jensen earlier on in the month of October.
Jensen from NHL.com. Pete, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
It's great to have you. The NHL season is here. It's upon us. I watched a little bit of the Penguins in Detroit, saw a little bit of the Pens in Columbus, and I actually saw a little bit of the Bruins and the Jets, Winnipeg Jets, last night. Let's talk about the Jets, because they changed conferences. The conference alignment, your thoughts on that, and then moving forward, what the conference alignment could look like.
Well, I think the conference alignment right now is, you know, it puts everything into the proper time zones. I mean, obviously you look at the Florida teams being in the same division, you know, as some of the teams up north in the Atlantic division. That, you know, many people question that. But I think overall it's going to do a nice job between the new scheduling format where every team is going to be playing in every building at least once.
Yeah,
I really like that.
That's big. That is exactly the way it should be done, because that's the way it used to be done.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's a nice bonus for everybody. I think you get more marquee teams coming in, teams that get fans interested, Chicago Blackhawks coming to the New York area a number of times. So that's a nice aspect of it. And then for a team like the Jets, it's going to do wonders for their travel plans. Also, a team like the Dallas Stars, who they were playing in the Pacific Division for a while, and you know they're in Middle America, and they're traveling out to San Jose and everything. Now they're in the Central Division, who's, you know, more teams like St. Louis, Chicago. So it seems like it fits pretty well for everybody, and yeah, it's going to develop some new rivalries. I think it has a lot of promise.
Yeah, I do too. Of course, free agency means a lot in the NHL, and especially with the cap. The Penguins spent some money without, you know, to keep Letang. You know, they already signed the big deal with Crosby. They ended up keeping, you know, of course, Gino Malkin has more to go on his contract. What are the more intriguing free agent moves that happened during the offseason that you think can change potentially the balance of power?
I think it was actually the trades that are going to really shift everything. I think you look at Tyler Seguin going to Dallas, Louis Erickson going to the Bruins, a very skilled forward, and then I think Bobby Ryan going to the Ottawa Senators. I think those trades are going to be just you know, really shift gears for some of those franchises. And, you know, Boston also adding Jerome McGinley in free agency. I think he's going to be rejuvenated playing on that top line with David Krejci and Milan Lucic. And then I mentioned Louis Erickson. He's going to be playing with Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron. So it's just it made teams like that pretty ridiculous. So there's a lot of big movers and shakers from this offseason. You know, some of the older guys, Daniel Alfredson, longtime Ottawa Senator, he's suddenly moving to the Detroit Red Wings. So there's a lot of intrigue in that regard, and you know, it's going to be an exciting season. There's a lot going on with a lot of different teams, and having a full season back is very compelling, especially after last year and what a whirlwind that was.
Pete, is it important to the NHL that stability has now happened in Phoenix?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. And I think you saw right around that time when things were being able to pan themselves out in Phoenix, one of the best power play point producers in the league, Mike Ribeiro with the Washington Capitals, really helped that team get back on track last year after a slow start. And you were able to see Phoenix sign him, and he was one of the best free agent centers available. So I think that shows you, and that really just bolsters their top line in Phoenix. So all of a sudden, you look at them with a franchise goaltender, two top 15 defensemen, and then bringing in a player of that caliber. I mean, Phoenix is a team, competitively speaking, that 2 years ago was in the Western Conference Finals. They got a great coach and GM tandem, and now having that sort of stability, just I think it's going to put that franchise on the map, not only in that region, but, you know, competitively speaking as well.
The owner, though, is a self-professed Quebec Nordiques fan, and he says he's not moving the team, and I actually take him at his word. I think he thinks Phoenix is a great place to have a club, which now brings up the prospect. You have cities that want the NHL. The NHL is not wanting for cities, Pete. Seattle wants a team. Quebec City wants a team. Obviously, Hartford wants a team. And then you look at, obviously, Hamilton would love to have a team. Is there anything in a five-year plan that says the NHL could add two more and get to a really what is a stable number in sports today of 32?
I mean, I can't speak for anyone, you know, higher above me, but I wouldn't rule it out. I think anything's possible, but when you start to look around, I think that, you know, today we got news that the Florida Panthers have a new owner, the New Jersey Devils earlier in the summer, you know, fixed up their ownership situation. So the more you see those loose ends being tied up, you mentioned Phoenix, I would say it's a possible route, but again, it's not something that I can speak confidently on, but, you know, it's when you connect the dots, it's a possibility, I would say.
Let's get to two teams that obviously intrigue everyone here. The Flyers missed the playoffs again last season. Have they put together a roster that has a semblance of a bounce back?
I think they have. I mean, I think they have the offensive firepower to really do some damage, as we know. Goaltending-wise, I think they maybe could have done a little better. They picked up Ray Emery, who is – a lot of people think of him as a veteran. He's been in the league for a while, but he's only 30. So it's possible that he could be a short-term solution for them. Steve Mason's a guy that – is a Calder Trophy winner, but he's just never really returned to form. He was great at the end of last year. Now he's been very shaky in the preseason. So goaltending is a big problem for the Flyers, as we know. And then defensively, they added Mark Streit, who's a great offensive defenseman, but I feel like that might complicate things where, you know, they might try to get him more power play time, and you look at how great of a connection it was last year in terms of power play points with Claude Giroux and Kimmo Tiiminen, who's another veteran. And then at the same time, the Flyers' defensemen had a lot of injuries last year. They're not especially strong on the back end from a defensive standpoint. They're great scoring-wise, but a lot of questions with the Flyers. I think they can get back to the playoffs, but, you know, it's definitely in question. Not as much of a sure thing as the Penguins.
And let's get to the Penguins. Your thoughts on them? They've kept the core group together, but it's not quite the same as it was last year when they made so many deals.
Right. They Brendan Morrow, Jerome Iginla, Tyler Kennedy, those guys are out the door. You look at some of their prospects in the system they're trying to bring up. It remains to be seen. I think one of the keys for that team, and you saw a little disconnect with the second line with Malkin and Neal, and it was Iginla last year in the playoffs. I think they're trying to either get Bo Bennett, one of their, you know, he played a little bit last year. He had some good chemistry, played a little on the power play. He's an option on that right side, and also Jussi Jokinen, who's played very well this preseason. He's kind of the front runner for that job right now, but a lot can change. But I think it's important for the Penguins offensively to have locked up those core players, Chris Kunitz, Evgeny Malkin. That's important. But, you know, one concern with the Penguins is not only Fleury, how stable or unstable he's going to be, but now Vokoun being out with the with the blood clot. That's a big blow to the Penguins.
Yeah, it is. You can tell it's the preseason when tonight's schedule includes games in Saskatoon and Las Vegas and Oklahoma City. I can tell you right now that the season actually does open for real on Tuesday when Toronto plays at the Bell Center against Montreal, and Washington's at Chicago and Winnipeg's at Edmonton. The Flyers will open against Toronto at home on Wednesday. The Penguins will open at home with New Jersey on Thursday. So that's how it shapes up. Pete, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate talking to you. And, enjoy the season. We'll loop up again soon.
That was Steve Jones and Pete Jensen from NHL.com, as Pete checked in with us before the NHL season got underway a couple of weeks ago. We'll talk more about the Penn State game from Saturday. You can talk a little high school football if you wish as well in the next hour. Then we'll also have an interview. We'll also have an interview about the Penn State game coming up at 4:06 with Donnie Collins of the Scranton Times-Tribune. He's going to talk about the way he saw the game from his spectator vantage point. Of course, Bob Buhner, were talking earlier about being in the stands as well. Is it louder at a night game at Penn State than in a day game? It seemed louder.
It was really, really loud. Now, there was some news report that some stadium on this weekend set
Kansas City.
Yeah, Kansas City.
Kansas City broke the Seattle record.
But you know what? That stadium at Penn State had to be up there in that kind of decibel level. I don't know how you measure it and all of that, but it was loud from the time the alumni band marched onto the field about 20 minutes before kickoff, and they were still cheering and screaming in the stands, and I was out in the parking lots doing things like that.
All right, we'll have more about the Penn State win on Saturday coming up. This is the Steve Jones Show, sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at purdyinsurance.com.